You can scale structure, you cannot scale complexity. Founders are not wired to create structure. So the team is a significant leadership shift in the company, but if the growth and scale comes in, it's gonna land on their shoulders. Focus not just on the what, but more importantly, we focus on how are you doing what you are doing.
Welcome back to the Breakout CEO Podcast, friends. I'm Jeff Holman, your host, and I'm really glad to be here today with Derek Fredrickson. Derek, thanks for coming on the show.
You're welcome, Jeff. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you. You're coming in from Paris, right?
That's right. Paris, France. I've been here for, obviously American, but I've been here for about 10 years.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I spent a week there on a one-month trip through Europe last summer. June, was it? I think June, May, June, July. I can't remember. We spent a month in Europe with the family and stayed 1 week in Paris.
Oh, lovely.
Absolutely loved it.
Yeah. We moved here for one year and then 1 year's turned into 10. So there you go.
Well, I should turn my 1 week into 4 weeks there next you go. Time or
yeah.
something like that.
Perfect.
Well, we're here to talk today. This is part of our Advisory Insights series where we bring on advisors and experts who help our other audience members, our scaling CEOs, our founders who are building businesses, and we share some frameworks, insights, resources that you people like you know, experts and service providers can bring to other members of our audience. And so today we're talking about finding and fixing executive leadership misalignment issues in scaling businesses. So I'm excited to talk about this as I've talked to a lot of our CEO guests. You know, this comes up so often. So many people are like, well, I was aligned and then I wasn't, or I never got aligned until I did. And that weaves into their success stories almost every time. I bet you run into that quite a bit.
A lot. Actually, with the clients that we work with, our clients are companies that are scaling and growing at multiple seven to multiple eight figures. And this is one of the inevitable subjects that we get into in the very beginning, because there's usually some misalignment from the get-go. And so part of what we have developed are some ideas and methodologies about how to break the misalignment and get the operator and the founder back on the same page so that things start moving in a positive direction and back on track. So yeah, it's definitely a big part of what we do.
I love that. Well, before we jump into that, the meat of it, let's give us a background on where you work, what you do, what takes you to France. Is that part of what you're doing, or is that just tangential?
It's somewhat part of it. That could be a whole other episode. But you know, my wife and I moved here really for quality of life. We all, you know, she owns a business coaching company, and I my business is remote, so we had an opportunity to spend a year here with our family and experience a different culture, a different language, and we did all of that.
Awesome.
And so. But everything that we do is primarily U.S.-based, so U.S. clients, U.S. companies, U.S. team. But yeah, my background, I've been doing COO, Chief Operating Officer, kind of second-in-command work for about 15 years. And then I kind of took off the COO operator hat 2 years ago and launched the COO solution and kind of put the CEO visionary hat on. So I have a unique perspective of being both an operator and a founder, if you will.
Love it. Love it.
And launched the COO solution. Essentially, we provide a done-for-you fractional COO model for companies that are scaling, basically to remove the founder from the day-to-day, streamline operations, hold the team accountable, create the structure and the systems and the process for scale so that they can get to their objectives, their goals of whatever they want to accomplish, whether that might be exit, it might be double my business, it might be I just want to take a break from the day-to-day and have somebody run my business for me. So that's how we step in and provide that model. Yeah.
Well, do you find that that's, I mean, that seems to me, but do you find that that's one of the key functions for going from an operator to a scaling business? I mean, because a lot of people, they build their business around themselves. That's like they're skilled operators. They're really smart people. They're engaging. They build relationships. They service their customers better than everybody else. And that's why people hire them. And then one day they're like, wait a second. I mean, this happens in the legal field that I'm in all the time. Wait a second. I'm now in the golden handcuffs, or I'm in, you know, legal jail because I'm like, how do I build beyond me? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's inevitable and there's nothing wrong with that path. I think entrepreneurship is never linear. So in the beginning, they had to be the jack of all trades. They had to be the marketer, the salesperson, the customer service, the bookkeeper, the website developer, even if they didn't know how to build a website. And I think as companies have grown, they've realized that, okay, I need support. I need somebody that I can count on to help execute at a certain level to relieve some of the day-to-day that they might be involved with. So they hire doers. They hire the bookkeeper. They hire the customer service person. They might hire, somebody that can handle the operations. But at a certain point, it's like new level, new devil. So they always hit that glass ceiling of complexity. And I think especially for companies and founders, when they're at that multiple seven-figure mark, if they see the light that more of the same is more of the same, they actually need a significant leadership change in the company in order to scale. And they need to really embrace the role more of the founder and of the visionary and less of the operator, which is hard for entrepreneurs because they love to, jump in and fix things. They love to be the problem solver. They love to be the person for everything. But at a certain point, they actually need to step out of the doing and often say, do less better, meaning more thinking, less doing, and rely on somebody that is a trusted second in command who has the zone of genius to run companies, to hold team members accountable and create the structure to scale. Founders are not wired to create structure. It's not very sexy for them in the sense that they maybe want it, but they don't want to be the one to do it. But when they know that structure is actually the thing that helps them scale, and when they can bring in somebody that they can trust to build that structure, that's when they can step back and really see that shift can happen in a really big way, but without having them to be the one that's actually doing all of the heavy lifting. Yeah,
that makes sense. And you said a phrase a little while back that I've never heard before. I love it. New level, new devil. So that's, I can see how that applies. When you're talking about this type of work, are you talking about like empowering your team below you, or are you talking about actually bringing in somebody who complements you at the top level? Are those the same thing or are those different?
They're different, but it's part of what a really good second in command will do. So I often describe part of what our model is on a vertical spectrum. And the vertical spectrum is that we are your strategic thought partner. We are your trusted second in command. Mm-hmm. We are the one that works with the founder to say, what is the big idea? What is the bigger future? What is the vision? What's your North Star that you want? It might be scale. It might be exit. Like I said, it might be you want to take an unplugged vacation for a couple of weeks. You may want to go to Paris and have a 1 week vacation or 4 week instead of a 1 week. And the second in command, the COO, is the one that captures that as the idea. We're the ones that say, okay, now let me develop the strategy. Now let me create the plan and cascade that down into execution, implementation, and the tactics with the team members that are aligned so that they know what they need to do day in, week out, in order to move the business forward. So we're kind of the glue between the strategy to the execution. I often say that the role of the founder, they make it up, right? The role of the COO is we make it real, we make it happen, and then the team is the one that makes it recur. The systems, the processes, the right people, the right seats. And sometimes at that team level, we assess and say, do you have the right seats? Do you have the right people in the right seats? Maybe of the right person, but they're on the wrong seat, or they don't really know what their seat is. Maybe their role isn't clear, their responsibilities aren't clear. And so we kind of either, I would say, maybe up level in a way, like build a culture of accountability and a culture of ownership within the team so that they can do things more efficiently, like get things done quickly, and they can do things more effectively. So they're getting a higher result. But also sometimes we might say, that's not the right person. They're not aligned in your values. They're not aligned in the culture of accountability. And we may need to bring in a better person for that right seat. But it's the vertical spectrum. That's the strategy all the way to the execution. But the team component is a big part. I often say that part of our work is to create a process-driven, not a person-driven company. And that doesn't mean we don't value people. But when your team has a really good process to follow, they can get in line and do really, really good work. So we focus on the process as well as the people. Yeah.
Well, and people usually love to know what their expectations are of them too. So a process helps them fit in better and collaborate in the right way. So now you said, I missed the first one. I can't remember it. You said something about the CEO's job is to make it something and then make it
their job is real. To make it, their job is to make it up. The big idea.
Make it up.
Vision, make it up.
Yep.
Make it real. Make it recur. The COO is the one that makes it real. Make it happen. And then the team, like you said, they just want to have their lane. Like I call them, and we all need them and we love them. They're the worker bees. They're the busy bees. They're the ones that dot the I's and cross the T's. But if they have a process to follow and a framework or a system, they feel really empowered because then they know exactly what to do, how to do it, when to do it by. That might be SOPs, it might be project management system, it might be checklist, and it's a more structured way of doing things. And you can scale structure, you cannot scale complexity. And if you have a business that feels complex because the team members are misaligned, the founder thinks we're going here, the team members think we're going over there. I mean, that's just like, you're going to have zigzag all the time, which is not going
to
work.
I will say, I think I've talked to some CEOs who said that they have effectively scaled complexity. The results aren't good, but they've scaled the chaos sometimes. Well, so give me an example of what it is that you would do, or maybe a company you've worked with, a CEO who you've stepped in to be their right-hand man. You know, what does that look like, and what kind of results are you able to achieve?
Yeah, I think we always start with, where do you want to be? Again, I always say, what's your North Star? The North Star might be exit. It might be scale. And it's, you know, when do you want to accomplish that? I don't want to know like the next quarter or the next 6 months. Like, paint the picture 1, 3, 5 years out, right? What does that look like? Start with the end in mind and say, okay, if that's where we're headed, if that's the objective, first of all, what's the intention? Like, what's the real objective of why you want to accomplish that? Is it just because you want to make more money? Is it because you want to take a break? Is it because you want to exit? Like, start with the end in mind. And I often say, part of our role is getting the founder to sell themselves on what is the objective of what they're trying to create. Because if they haven't sold themselves on it, how are they going to sell it with the team and say, hey guys, here's where we're going. So we kind of, and visionaries are, as you probably know, CEOs, founders, they're high idea generators. So one day it might be this, and one day it might be that. They're throwing a lot of spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. And we say, if this is going to stick, then that's where we're headed. But let's get really, really clear and sell yourself first on the vision. Then we can cascade that into the plan. So it starts with that kind of intentionality and what's the real objective. From there, it's like, okay, trust the process. Trust that your operator is the one that's going to make it happen. They're going to own the strategy, the KPIs, the metrics, the results. You don't need to, as the founder, step in and micromanage. You don't need to babysit. You don't need to be the one, did we do this? Did we do that? Because they're not wired for that. They're not wired for accountability. They're not wired for that day-to-day execution. They're wired for thinking big. So let them continue to think big and stay in the visionary box while they have a trusted operator that's actually owning the result and owning the outcome in a more systematic, process-driven way. I'll give you an example, which is probably a long way to get to your question. So
no, this is great.
Classic scenario. I won't mention a name because, you know, he still works with us and he owns an engineering company in Arizona.
Well, and let me give the disclaimer that you should be giving too. Everybody's been through this. Yeah. Like this is not uncommon. It's normal that like you could put any name on there and it would probably apply to all of us.
So well, client X, he or she owns an engineering company. And so they were doing about $2.5 million a year. And the founder, classic example, working nights and weekends, constantly on the phone, pinging. There was no structure. There was no, everything was chaos. It was whack-a-mole. Yeah. And part of that was the difficulty for him to take this. I have lots of crazy ideas. I have lots of things I want to start, but I have nobody here to finish them. And the team is trying to like say, okay, here's the big vision. And I'm trying to do my day to day. I have no direction. I have no clarity. I have no real path of what my part is in that. And so
it's just lobbing stuff over the fence. Yeah. Like, hey, take care of this. It's going to be cool once you figure it out.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm going to a client visit and like, here's this new project. And I call it like, you know, drive by delegation of it. And let me know how it goes on Monday and I'll see you after the weekend. You know, the team is left holding this and be like, okay, now I have this brand new thing that the business owner wants me to move forward. I don't know what the objective is. I don't know what the intention is. I don't know what my role is. And also, how am I supposed to do this when I've also got the rest of my day-to-day that I'm already focused on from the stuff that he asked me last week? So one of the first things we did is said, first of all, you need to get clear on what's your objective. What is it that you really, really want? And then from there, I said, okay, great. Let's reverse engineer. And this is what a really good COO does. They reverse engineer to say, okay, this is where we are today. This is where you want to be in 1 year time. What needs to happen in the first week, the first month, the first quarter, the second quarter, et cetera, so that we know where we're going based on your objective and what we're doing daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, in order to be on track with that. And part of that was also trusting the process and knowing that visionaries are not wired to finish things. They're wired to start new things and let us come in and do the implementation, do the completion. And so as a result, the team felt more, I would say, more empowered. Like they feel like they could be more responsible for what their role is because they knew the objective. They knew the clarity of what their part was to make that happen. The founder then also as a matter of trust, but also kind of flexing the muscle of boundary, like not stepping back in when you feel like you have to rescue or you feel like you have to save and kind of micromanage. And we're not babysitters. We create the structure for accountability, which allows the work to get done. So we don't have to say, did you do this? Did you do that? Where are we, et cetera? And then one of the things I'll share, which has worked really, really well for us with our clients, is that as we're progressing on those big objectives, those big projects, rocks, whatever they're going to be, that are going to get us to the future goal, we have a very transparent way to reflect, are we on track or are we off on, or are we off track? So on track, it's a color system. On track means green. Great. I don't need to know anything else. It's on track. There are no issues. Go team, go. Yellow.
And a CEO who is a visionary probably doesn't want to know more than that.
No, they don't.
Please don't be yellow today because I don't want to have to dig into the details.
Yeah, like, and I don't just want the story. I don't want the drama. Yeah. I don't want all the, I just want the top line summary. The top line summary is that project is on track. It's green.
Right.
Great. Go to the next one. It's off track, but we're very confident it's going to be on track because there's some issues we need to solve. Okay, that's fine. That's yellow. Orange is off track. We're somewhat confident. The issues are surfing a bit more. There might be some confusion. There might be some complexity. So we're still somewhat confident, but we're kind of in the middle. Red is we're off track and we're not confident to get back on track. That's where the CEO can step back in because maybe they need to be adding another layer of clarity or another layer of like, hey guys, this is what the vision is. Go team, go. Drum up the troops,
sort of authorizing the resources.
Exactly. Readjust resources, or maybe somebody needs to pivot into a different direction. And purple is, you know, we haven't even started it yet. We haven't even made any momentum whatsoever. And then blue is actually it's done. But I think that's really helpful for a visionary who is a visual person to be able to assess and feel confident on where we are without having to feel like I have to step back in and save things all the time.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious then, first off, how did the engineering firm proceed from there? Like, I have two questions actually. Sorry. What was the team size? I wanted to, cause you got a CEO with an engineering firm, 2.5 million. What was the team size just for context? And then what was the result?
I would say about 6 to 8 field engineers. You know, there are people that were doing operations. They had some marketing people in sales. So probably the whole operation was about 20. And the founder had been growing more and more, but as a result of this over a period of time, two things happened. Number one, revenue grew, but not just revenue grew, profit grew. So that was the tangible result. That's what the founder really wanted. But the intangible, the thing that I actually think made the difference more is that he actually stepped out of the doing and was able to, kid me not, first time ever take an unplugged vacation where he wasn't checking his email and phone all days of the time. And, you know, that's one of those things that you can't get that back. You can't get that time back. So if you're able to step away from the business and be able to trust and know that things are being done and come back and see results and progress and momentum even better than if you were there, one, they want to take another vacation. And two, they feel so much more confident. And confidence is everything. Because when they feel confident, then they feel really clear about where we're going and how we're going to get there. So it was kind of a two-pronged, benefit, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. And when they feel confident, the team sees that. The team feels confident. It goes throughout the organization for sure. Well, I'd like to know, because I'm curious, what should a scaling CEO who's dealing with some chaos know about how a structured, you know, successful COO thinks? Because that seems to me there's a difference there, right? Like, I want to understand the thinking of the COO so that I can know how to give stuff to the COO or how to present it. Maybe I'm overthinking that. Maybe it's just give them everything and let it go. But I think if CEOs understand the different thinking processes a COO might use, that might help them to leverage or to work in a complementary way.
Sure. So one of the things that we do with all of our clients is we use a lot of assessments. And assessments are really, really powerful in understanding how are individuals, for example, wired to take action and what are their strengths. These are two different assessments. One is called COLBE, K-O-L-B-E, which is an assessment that allows individuals, it's not a personality thing, but allows us to understand like, how are you wired to take action? Are you wired by doing fact-finding research? Do you follow systems? Do you think in a process-driven way? Are you one that mitigates risk? That's the COO. The CEO doesn't follow a system. They don't do a lot of fact-finding and research. They have an idea and they kind of jump in and go with it. And they have a high tolerance for risk, which is why they initiate and start lots of things. So on paper, it's oil and water. But when you know that that's typically how a CEO is wired and how a COO is wired, and you can bridge the gap from strategy to execution, from creation to ownership, that's where things really start to gel. So yeah, that's one of the very first things that we do, is, you know, through that assessment. But also, like I described, I mean, COOs are, they love running other people's companies. That's their zone of genius. They love being in the back seat or the backstage. They don't want the front stage. They don't want the spotlight. They like to be kind of like the wizard in The Wizard of Oz, you know, behind the curtain, like pulling all the things to make it all happen, because they see everything. They're kind of like an air traffic controller looking at the entire business and saying, this is what's not working in marketing. This is what's working in ops. This is what's not working in that team capacity. They have an eye into the day-to-day, where the founder sometimes doesn't, because it's not exciting for them. It doesn't light them up, because it's like details. It's like the little nitty-gritty of what's going on in the day-to-day, where they want to focus on the vision. They want to focus on the big idea. So the COO is more wired and has strengths in execution and implementation. We love to get stuff done. CEOs don't like to get stuff done. They like to create. They like to ideate. They like to develop relationships and network and partnerships and sales and everything and culture. So there's very clear boxes, if you will. And when you can get the CEO and the COO to agree that that's your lane, that's my lane, never shall the two cross. Because if I, as a COO, start to try to pretend to be the CEO and say, here's the culture, here's the vision, here's the big idea, first of all, the business owner's going to be like, no, you're not. This is my thing. And if the CEO steps in and tries to micromanage, babysit, or hold people accountable in a way that they would, because it's not their natural strength, it's going to be like oil and water. So part of it is just understanding who you naturally are and kind of tap into that more in both categories, both for the CEO and the COO. I hope that helps.
That makes perfect sense. It makes me wonder, though, how will a CEO know, or what should they be looking for? What kind of signals? Because they're not measuring stuff like the COO, right?
So they
work off these signals a lot of times, not measurements.
Right.
What kind of signals should the CEO be aware of to recognize when maybe there is leadership misalignment, and something needs to happen?
So in addition to like the status tracking or the progress tracking I shared before, this is just the way that I operate, and all of our COOs think in this way. We are very analytical. We are very numbers driven. And I firmly believe that numbers do not lie. They tell the story of what's working and what's not working. So one of the first things that we do when we work with the client, we say, okay, are you tracking KPIs, metrics? Do you have a dashboard? Are you looking at, you know, the numbers that need to actually drive the performance of the business? And I just don't mean financial numbers, because that's where they usually gravitate. Like, what's my P&L? What's my cash balance, et cetera? I'm talking about a scorecard or a dashboard with KPIs and metrics across marketing, sales, operations, and finance. Now, that doesn't have to be every single number that's going on, but the key drivers that are really going to paint the picture of, are we on track? Are we getting our results? And if there are numbers that are indicating to us that we're not getting our targets met, then it can come back to and say, okay, who owns that number? Who owns, for example, the number of leads? Who owns, for example, the client satisfaction, or who owns, you know, how well we're closing prospects to paying clients and customers? Maybe it's the salesperson, maybe it's the marketer. But that's part of this culture of accountability to say, listen, not only are you in charge of your day-to-day responsibilities if you're in the marketing seat, as an example, but you also have ownership to lead generation. You have ownership to, you know, website traffic, to paid ads, whatever that is. And if we have targets that we know we need to hit in order to get to our objective and our North Star, and every single week we see that those numbers are not hitting our target, something's off. And we'll say, what's the issue with the number being off? Who owns the number? And what are they going to do to fix it to get back on track? That's what I call a culture of accountability, but it really stems from the numbers, because then it can really pinpoint at a detailed level what's working and what's not. And I think on a positive note, you know, CEOs don't love a lot of metrics and charts and flow charts and everything else, but they like to see what's working and what's not. And it, through the story of the numbers, they can kind of determine, okay, I feel, again, confident that we're on track, or if I need to step in, I can identify how and where I need to step in, because I can see that we're off based on these numbers, as an example. And I think energetically, like what you track, you attract. So we were looking at things every single week. It's like, great, lead generation is up, closing is up, the financials are good. Great, go team go. It's just a rising tide lifts all boats and everybody feels more empowered and more engaged as a result of that. So it's usually numbers.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, and what's the non-number feeling or the non-number signal that they'll feel once there is alignment? How, like, is it just they see a bunch of green every week and they're like, okay, great, we're running smoothly? Or is there something more when they say, you know what, it's not just that my team is hitting metrics and we're achieving results, but like I feel like my leadership team is really functioning well. It's like, do they just feel it, or is there something more that they could watch for as a signal?
I think it's both, but if I'm being honest, I think it is a feeling, because it's also something that in most cases in the past, it's a feeling that maybe they haven't had before, because there's been this frantic energy of I need to kind of control, I need to micromanage, I need to step in and everything else. I think one of the best feelings that a founder can have is when they're spending more time in the sandbox of ideation and creativity and vision than they are in the rigid box of the day-to-day. And so oftentimes if we work with a founder and I feel like they can, you know, take that vacation and disconnect, or they can take a day out of the office and just, you know, go to the library or stay at home or just, you know, read books, listen to podcasts, do mind maps, whatever that is, like that feeling just lights them up so much more when they know that they have the trust, the faith and the confidence that the day-to-day is handled. And I go like this, like it's hard for them to be like waiting or wanting this to be taken care of and also at the same time focusing on the next big thing. Because here's what happens. I do this all the time, and it's very enlightening, I think, for CEOs. So CEOs, they want growth. They want scale. They want whatever the big thing. So they're like, bring me the scale. Bring me the growth. Bring me the freedom. Mm-hmm. But hold on. Subconsciously, if they put up the blinder, because their back end, their operations, their team, their structures and systems is not meant to handle the growth and scale. So subconsciously, they kind of block it, because if the growth and scale comes in, it's going to land on their shoulders. So they kind of feel right. Like subconsciously, I don't want the growth and scale anymore, because it's going to be too much.
Have you been watching my business, or what's going on? You're like, literally, as we're a five attorney law firm. We have some staff, and for 2 years, I went out and I'm like, well, I'm going to build this part of our business, and I started everything, and I, you know, got halfway into it, and I'm like, we don't have the structure for this. Like, what am I doing? And so I stopped, and then I did it the next year because I was excited, and then I stopped, and then it came to my mind again. I'm like, no, wait, I've done this twice now. And I went to my team instead of me just jumping in. I went to my team. I said, hey, listen, I've tried this twice. I'm really excited about this. It's going to be good for everybody once we get to it, but we need to put this type of infrastructure in place first. If you can do that, and I'm going to do my best to hold off and not try to jump in. If you can do that, and once that's ready, then that's going to be one of our growth paths. And so we finally, without me doing this start, stop dance, we finally have everybody on board. We're building out the structure to handle the growth instead of just trying to push the growth without the structure.
So yeah.
You've described, I think, one of the dances I've done the last few years.
It's totally natural. I mean, that's the journey, right? And that's part of, and I love what you said, because that part of what you had is the idea. It was the inspiration, the download, whatever it is, to be like, I feel we need more structure. I feel we need to create something that's going to be the foundation for us to grow and scale. But what you did is you made it up, but you didn't have to be the one to make it real. There could be team members that are like, okay, should we just go? Do we need a project management system? Do we need better SOPs? Do we need more checklists? Yeah. And that's the make it real part. And the team members are then feeling empowered, because then they have the SOPs and the checklists and the tools of actually doing things in a different way. I'll share this, which I think is really helpful for the audience, is that for founders that are looking to grow and scale, and of course, it's what you need to do. I need to market expansion, launch new products and programs, create new service offerings, right? That's the stuff that's going to be the what. But in order to grow and scale, what we as COOs do, we focus not just on the what, but more importantly, we focus on how are you doing what you are doing. Because the how you're doing actually is the foundation for scale, because you can come up with the what's all day long. Those are all the ideas. These are all the crazy throwing spaghetti to see what sticks. And we can jumpstart a lot of those. But if there's no structure in place to implement projects, to hold people accountable, to have metrics and KPIs, it's going to feel like more complexity. And that's, like I said, you know, we can't scale complexity. So
Right. No, we're getting back to make it up and make it real.
There you go.
How is the make it real? Well, Derek, I've taken up a bunch of your time this morning, and I'm so grateful that you've shared a bunch of these insights with us. What would you leave our CEOs with as kind of parting words of wisdom? You know, the one thing that's going to make a difference in your business, or just something to watch out for. What would you tell them?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's as you've grown and scaled your business, I feel like you've had these moments where there's called a light bulb or epiphany, which is, you know, more of the same is more of the same. And in order for me to change, I need to initiate change. And if it may think for them to have a moment of reflection, like maybe I do need an operator to help run my business for me, or a COO or whatever that might be. It's not a transactional decision, right? This is not like I'm just going to hire somebody else on the team. It's a significant leadership shift in the company, but it's going to allow you to get to where you really want to go without it being dependent upon you. So if you're feeling the weight, if you're feeling the frustration of the day to day, if you're feeling drained because you're involved in these things that are just like in the moment, like, why am I doing this? Why am I dealing with these team members? Why am I dealing with these issues? Why am I dealing? If you're dealing, take a higher path and look at it from a different perspective and say, in order for you to grow and scale, you need to gotta get out of your own way, bring in somebody to run your company for you, and focus more on the vision and the bigger future. So that's what I would say. Yeah.
Well, I love it. And if somebody wants to get a hold of you, contact you, is LinkedIn a good place, or where would they do that?
They can go to the website. It's called thecoosolution.com. And there's a quiz there if somebody's interested that helps them understand, maybe I should consider exploring the idea of getting a fractional COO. It's a really good deep dive analysis on, you know, where you are, where you want to be, but also it gets under the hood of understanding what's working and what's not working in your marketing, sales, operations, finance team. And through that, it could uncover some opportunities and some things that you could consider about whether it's getting support or just, I didn't realize that these are some of the things I need to focus more in order for me to continue to grow. So that's a resource if somebody wants to take a look at it.
Awesome. And that's the COO solution, right?
Correct. Thecoosolution.com. Yeah.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, Derek, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us and joining us from Paris.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciated it. Thank you.
Yeah. And to those of you in our audience who joined and listened to the show today, thanks for joining us on the CEO on the Breakout CEO podcast. And we'll talk to you next time. Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.